So I have to ask you two guys, I want you guys to reveal your underwear routine.
This is the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
Pardon it.
Here's your host, Greg Cody.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Greg Cody Show. Before we get started today with this newest edition of the program, I feel the need to assure listeners of something, in case you've been wondering. I do have on a fresh pair of underwear today, okay, for this occasion. I know on the Levitard show last week, I dared to mention that I sometimes go two straight days without changing underwear. Everybody was aghast. It's like there was an outcry. You'd have thought I had admitted to storing human corpses in my basement freezer. So I have to ask you two guys, am I that wrong on this subject? Am I alone here? I want you guys to reveal your underwear routine.
Yes, you are that wrong and you are that messed up. This is, you are my hero, brother. And I am not trying to make you feel bad, but this is terrible.
Okay. Juju, I can't be perfect.
For those of you who don't recognize that voice because Greg failed to introduce him, that is Juju Gotti.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to be here. But yeah, you're not perfect, big brother, but you can change the drops.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I'm going to try to get better about that. But, you know, I never go a week or 3 days. I'm talking about 2 days, for Christ's sake.
It's hot in Florida.
Yeti, what about you?
I'm in every day. There is the rare occasion where it might bridge over into the second day, but that's really, really, really rare. I have to be really tired and not have gotten like sweaty throughout the day. I shower every night. Like I hate going to bed without a shower. So it's rare occasion, but almost always got to change them, Greg.
I'm bougie. I get a pack of underwear and I wear them once and I just throw them away as I go. And I just buy new underwear every week.
What?
I mean, I used to be homeless. You know what I mean? This is a luxury to me.
Wow. That's crazy. By the way, Christopher, who's usually in here, is not here because he vacated South Florida and is vacaying somewhere, I think in South Carolina. I don't even know, but he'll be back next week. Hey, we don't talk sports much on what ostensibly, but barely, is a sports podcast, but what a time of year. I'm preparing to go cover game one of the Panthers-Tampa Bay Lightning playoff series. Inter-Miami and the Marlins are both playing. The Dolphins' schedule is out in their rookie minicamp ending. Chris Bosh is about to get elected to the Basketball Hall of Fame if there's any sliver of justice left in the world, which reminds us the Heat closed their regular season Sunday and await their first round playoff matchup. And by the way, did either of you guys see the Udonis Haslam thing the other night?
That made my night.
Oh my God.
Yes, sir. He's the greatest of all time. Shouts out to UD. He earned every penny of his contract last night.
He did.
My favorite part was seeing how excited Dan Le Batard got on Twitter. Like, he was really legitimately fired up, and that just made me all the more excited for everything that was going on. It was great.
Right, and it felt because it was Dwight Howard. It's like, yeah, watch out. You know what I mean? Get out.
I mean, you don't, you know, Dwight knocked Udonis on his ass, and you don't do that to the OG in his own building. I mean, the way Udonis reacted, I thought was just precious. Here's a 41-year-old guy playing in his first game of the season. He's on the floor for like a minute and a half, and he scores two quick buckets, and then he gets ejected. It was just sublime. And that's so classy of Spoelstra to find a way to get him in, which you knew he would, but that had to be a special moment for the fans as well.
They should make a banner out of that and put it up in
just a video screen of that on loop up in the Raptors.
Right.
Oh, when the Heat do their highlight reel from the regular season to hype the playoffs, you know that's going to be in there.
Oh, yeah.
Right up with all the great dunks and all that stuff.
Hell yeah.
Well, hey, I want to tease the show a little bit because we have a big one here. We have, in addition to Juju sitting in with us, with Yeti and I, we have the one of the weirdest guests in history because they're two teenage twins named Aiden and Maxwell Resnick. They're stat freaks, analytic wonderkins. In other words, they are real nerds. And I say that lovingly because...
Lovingly.
Yeah, I really do. They authored a book called The Stats Game, A Deep Dive into Sports Analytics in the Modern Era. It's about how, you know, how and why sports analytics have sort of changed the way franchises and teams operate. It's against everything I stand for, because I like to know less about stats than more. But I'd like you listeners to imagine a younger Chris Whittingham, only there are two of them, and each one is trying to seem smarter than the other. So, you know, this is a weird interview. It's either going to leave you enlightened or annoyed. So we're going to find out that in a little bit. But right now, I got this happened to me a few weeks ago. You guys may remember. Joe Biden keeps calling me. You know, we've the Codys have developed a little bit of a relationship with him, and I don't take his calls because it's always sort of nutty why he's calling me. And so he left another message for me, and I want to play it for y'all right now.
Just leave your number, 'cause I ain't at home. Just leave your name and number, 'cause I ain't at home.
Hey GC, it's Joe. I need your advice on something. You got a dog and a cat, right? Well, explain to me how they get along. 'Cause I grew up in a dog family in Scranton. We never had a cat. Times were tough in Scranton. Dad'd sit around the kitchen table and say, I'm working like a one-armed paper hanger to put food in our mouths without worrying about cat food. Now Jill wants to bring a cat into the White House. GC, I'm more nervous than a pregnant nun. I got enough problems with my shepherd, Major, biting people. My press secretary, Jen, makes fun of me all the time. Says I should be called Joe Biden. I'm worried this new cat won't last 2 days around Major. The fur is going to fly, as my dad used to say, sitting around the kitchen table in Scranton. Dad spent a lot of time sitting at that kitchen table, now that I think about it. Anyway, GC, I need some intel on how you got your cat and dog to get along and fast, because Jill's hell-bent on this. I'm already imagining TMZ with footage of a dead cat in the Rhodes Garden. It'd be the lead story on Fox for a week. Get back to me, GC, on this before Major starts getting that look in his eye. Hang on, he's running after the Undersecretary for Nuclear Security. Major! Major!
All right, Joe, maybe next time I'll pick up the call. By the way, Biden's answering machine was paid for by the Greg Cody Show's brand new sponsor that we're introducing today, Nelly's Diner.
Yeah, Nelly's Diner. There's no dilemma where I'm eating dinner tonight.
Hell yeah, let's all meet at Nelly's.
It's the sight, the sound, the smell of it, morning, night, or noon. It's the feeling you're always welcome, and when you leave, we'll see. It's the place you always go to when you're with friends or you're all alone. It's the taste of Nelly's Diner that makes you feel at home.
Step back in time when you step into Nelly's Diner. It's the only place in town to taste Wild Bill Cody's Bison Burger, deep fried in Nana's 100-year-old lard. Or try a tall stack of our award-winning PFBI pancakes. Dig into the signature Thang and a Thang salad. Or try an Uncle Dick footlong. Anything you want and anytime you want it, we got it. All served up with a free side of smiles. We are right where we've been for 60 years at 1440 Zagacki Street downtown. Nelly's Diner. It's the taste of home you never had because your mom sucked at cooking.
It's the taste of Nelly's Diner that makes you feel at home.
Ah, man, the best part of waking up, man, with Nelly's Diner in my cup. That's a masterpiece. Play that at my funeral. Play that song.
All right. Well, welcome, Nelly's Diner. It's a beautiful place. I've been there myself, and it's just a wonderful joint to go. If you're ever in the area, please do stop by. Okay, now let's get to the book authors. Aiden and Maxwell Resnick, who wrote a new book called The Stats Game. And if you all are into sports analytics, I think you're really going to enjoy this. It's an interesting conversation. We tried to have a little fun with it as well. And after these superstar twin wonderkind authors, we're going to talk to Juju and Yeti about the phenomenon of the Levitard Show fan. So you won't want to miss that. But here are the twins. We're happy to be joined here by unusual guests and that they're so young. Aiden and Maxwell Resnick, they're high school seniors. You guys are the youngest guests we've ever had on our podcast, so that's something a little different. You're both just turned 18.
That would be funny if they were different ages as they're twins.
At any rate, this is interesting to me because when they were 17, they wrote a book, okay? When I was 17, I was playing Ms. Pac-Man and lamenting my lack of college scholarship offers. And these two got together and wrote a book called The Stats Game, A Deep Dive into Sports Analytics in the Modern Era. Guys, first of all, I have to ask you, what inspired you to write this dense book? Because it's not like a light book. It's pretty serious. It's about as serious as sports can get, I guess.
Well, thank you. So just for some background, we've been big sports fans our whole life. You know, whenever there's baseball, hockey, football, basketball, tennis on, we're always interested in watching. And so we've always had that component. And then sort of as a separate note, we've always been very passionate about math and quantitative analysis. But it was, I guess, sort of due to the pandemic, you know, a lot of our plans over the summer last year were canceled. And so we were left at home with not that much to do. And so we, you know, we said to each other, like, why don't we embark on this project that, you know, we'd have a lot of fun doing and it would be really helpful for us, helpful for anybody who's interested in reading. And so that's sort of how that started. And then, you know, the book really wrote itself. We're so interested and passionate about what we wanted to write about that it, we're really just putting our thoughts down on the page. And so it was a blast and we had a lot of fun doing it. And we're very glad that we did it.
How did you guys break it down? Like, was one of you mainly the researcher and the other was substantially the writer, or was it pretty much an even mix of how it was actually produced, the book?
So, I mean, we decided pretty early on that we were going to have approximately 10 chapters. We ended up doing 10 exactly. And so we decided that each of us would take the lead on five of them. Overall, I mean, we kind of split it up, but we didn't really split it up entirely in the sense that my chapters were also his chapters and his were mine. And at the end, like, we have relatives who, like, have heard us talk about sports since we were 3 years old, and they couldn't even differentiate sometimes if I wrote a chapter or if Aiden wrote a chapter, just because we were both so mixed in there at the same time.
Did you guys do a deep dive into the analytics of what the proper amount of chapters are to have in a book?
You know, in hindsight, maybe we should have. I think 10 was a good number because we thought that like 9 or 11 or any odd number sort of was like a little unsatisfying, I guess. So we definitely had ideas for other things to add, other things to take out, but we really think that we went with the 10 best or the best.
Luckily, you still have time to maybe write some other books in your life. What in the book was the most contentious for you guys? Was there like anything, any topic in the book that you guys like butted heads on, you know?
Well, we didn't necessarily butt heads on this, but this is like a sort of like a controversial aspect of analytics. When I say the word analytics, a lot of people, specifically in older generations, automatically assume that that means, oh, data, numbers, all this math, that people think that it could be ruining the way the game is supposed to be played. But really, analytics is more the study of information. Now, granted, I would say approximately 90% of that information happens to come in numerical form, but that doesn't mean qualities that you cannot quantify. That doesn't mean that they're not important. They definitely matter. So I think the second chapter of the book is titled Do Not Exclude Qualitative Analysis. That basically walks us through the story of George Springer, the now Toronto Blue Jays center fielder. And most people know Springer for being able to hit 40 home runs in a season or really being one of the best players in baseball right now. But it wasn't always that easy for him. Springer is a guy who overcame a stutter at a very late age, at an age where for most people, if you still have a stutter by then, you're not likely to overcome it. He displayed something called the growth mindset. And that's a mindset that he's really internalized in baseball. You can't put that onto a box score or I guess in numbers, but that doesn't mean it doesn't matter. So that's one aspect of analytics that we want to, I guess, clarify overall.
Yeah. And then I would also say, from my perspective, the next chapter is like avoid the eye test when possible. And for me, it was really fascinating to write about the eye test, you know, like.
What about the sniff test?
Yeah, yeah.
What about the sniff test? I don't like the, I'm with you on the eye test. The eye test is ridiculous, but the sniff test, come on, man.
Yeah, that's valid. That's valid.
Aiden, try it out.
Yes, I will. I will.
I'm one of those old guys who grew up in an age when if you were baseball.
And really, it's hard to tell. We could not tell that you were one of the old guys.
And you had a list of all everybody's batting averages and RBI totals, and you felt like, you know, you had as much information as you needed. And now with all these analytics breaking everything down minutely, for example, now you can go someplace and find out how many steps or how many miles Steph Curry ran in a basketball
game.
You're
so old.
To me, it seems like too much information. I get why if you're a general manager trying to compete now, you need as much of this mega information as you can get. My question is, how do analytics help me as a consumer enjoy sports more?
I know that on the surface, I mean, even to us, I mean, we were born in 2003, so like we've grown up basically in the era of analytics. But even so, I mean, sometimes there are statistics where I'm like, what on earth does that mean? And but right. the thing that's important to recognize is that some of them are intentionally put on a scale that's easy to understand. Let me give you an example. One of the most analytical statistics out there is this statistic called wins above replacement or WAR. Basically, that statistic tells you literally just that. How many wins above a replacement level player does someone provide?
Mike Trout, good WAR.
Yeah, exactly. So if you see, okay, this season, Mike Trout had 10 wins above replacement, that is easy to interpret. You can look at that and say, this season, if the Angels did not have Mike Trout and they had a replacement level player instead, they would have won 10 fewer games approximately. Now, that's not to say that it's precise to the bone, but that does give you a very good idea of a player's value. One thing that we've both found to be fantastic is percentiles. You look at different analytics websites or analytics presentations, we'll use percentiles. So, you know, which is more telling? Juan Soto's ex-WOBA was 0.45 or Juan Soto's ex-WOBA was in the 100th percentile, right? Probably the latter, because it sort of shows how he played with respect to the league average or the remainder of the league, at least. So I think that's just a really like simple way to make things easier, because, you know, you could have the best stats in the world, but if they're not presented in a way that's easy to understand, they're completely meaningless.
I'm going to ask you a question about a random player down here in Miami, the Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. I wonder if you know enough about him and his rookie season to have any opinion whether, based on analytics, he's going to be a good quarterback. I know that's a general question, but down here, there's a lot of debate. Is he going to be good? Should they trade to get Deshaun Watson?
Tua Tagovailoa is one of the most complicated quarterback prospects I've seen in my lifetime. Alabama quarterbacks statistically don't have a great track record in the NFL because oftentimes, I mean, their college statistics are just wildly inflated because they are playing with the most talented players in the country. Now, with that said, that doesn't mean I don't like Tua at all. I think it honestly angers me a little when I see people just automatically jump ship on Tua. I'm not saying he's going to be anything special, but we don't know yet. I think the Dolphins honestly have a very promising core. They had a very good defense this year. If Tua can pick it up to like league average play this year, which is like baby steps. I mean, nobody's saying he should be Patrick Mahomes this upcoming season, but if he could pick it up to league average, then the Dolphins could very, very, very well fight for a playoff spot. Now, also one thing I just want to add is if they do have the option to trade for Deshaun Watson, like without giving everything, I would take it. I mean, Deshaun Watson's a guy where if you add that guy to your franchise, you're instantly in playoff contention, unless you're as pathetic as the rest of the Texans roster. But yeah, that's kind of my sense.
I didn't hear much analytics there, but that was a great just breakdown of that situation right there. Like, do you guys not do quarterbacks in terms of like deep analytics? You could have been on like NFL Live right there, just breaking that down. And that was solid.
So yeah, there are analytics that are telling of his performance, and overall, they're not in his favor. In a year and a half or so down the road, he hasn't shown any improvement. Then we could start talking, okay, maybe he is not the guy here.
We were speaking with Aiden and Maxwell Resnick, the teenage identical twins and whiz kid co-authors of The Stats Game, a new book about analytics.
Not completely identical. Not completely. I mean, maybe you guys are technically identical, yeah. But I could see.
Yeah, you can tell.
My wife, listen, guys, I'm a pro at this. My wife's a twin. Okay, I'm in the club. I can tell my wife and her. I can tell you apart.
It's the hair mostly. Yeah,
that is. It is the hair actually. But what's the end game here? In like 5 or 6 years, best case scenario, like what sports team are you guys running? I could just tell that's the end game for you guys.
That's a tough question because I mean, on one hand, you know, we're 18 years old. We're like still in high school. So on the surface, we'll take any job that's available to us. Like, but I guess if we're talking about like our dream and like what the ultimate goal is, baseball, I'd say a pro is. It's the most quantifiable sport. And so I think it's pretty clearly out of the big four American sports, it's a pretty clearly the easiest to analyze. The downside about baseball that I think we both agree on is that there's no salary cap. And so naturally it's going to be incredibly difficult to manage a small market team. They're not saying we're not up for the challenge, but I think we're much more interested in playing a game that's fair for everybody and not, you know, being with like a team that's paying their players a third of what the Yankees are paying their players.
That it doesn't sound like they're taking this Marlins job. Doesn't sound like it.
Well, actually, let me just throw this in there. I think honestly, the ultimate goal is would be honestly to lead a small market baseball team to a championship. Yeah, that's true. Let me put it this way.
Let's go.
No, honestly,
guys, come on down. Miami is beautiful, guys. The beaches.
I would love to work for the Marlins one day. I mean, let me put it this way. Like, if you lead the Yankees to the championship, like, yeah, I mean, that's a great accomplishment. But like, that's what they're supposed to do. The Yankees are that, I guess, Goliath team that's really supposed to go all the way. I mean, it's their payroll and everything. But that said, I mean, I'm not a Tampa Bay Rays fan, and I'm also not a New York Yankees fan. But seeing the Rays really like just knock off the Yankees, having Mike Brasseau hit a game-winning home run off of Aroldis Chapman, I mean, that like, I'm getting chills just thinking about it. I mean, that was like one of the biggest victories for analytics since Moneyball. That would have been the storybook ending to Moneyball. The small guys really taking down the big guys. That would honestly be the dream, in my personal opinion.
But I think one thing that we're both really interested in sort of paving the way for a new generation. And so that sort of, we had like a, writing the book was like a small part of that. You know, there's so much work to be done. Like what we're saying to you guys today, I guarantee in 10 years, it'll seem outdated, and that's okay.
Do you guys go to bed every night to Moneyball?
You know, not quite. Although I think, you know, I've really been interested like reading lately. We both have always been interested, as I said, in math, statistics, computer science. But, you know, one thing that I think we've both really gained an appreciation for is the idea of just decision-making. The human brain is wildly imperfect. If we can understand, you know, exactly how to make decisions so that they can lead to the optimal outcomes, we believe that that's really the future of sports.
Do you guys ever lapse into sibling rivalry? Like, are there examples where you're arguing with each other or arguing who's the better chess player or anything like that? Or are you like constantly agreeable?
I mean, we never really debated like who's better at this. I think most of our arguments came about sports, like which player is better, which team is better,
right.
Why. Like, you know, we're big fantasy sports players. And so naturally, you know, each baseball season or each football season, we're set out to support a 25 or I guess in football, like 16 random players in the sport. And so naturally that poses like 25 or 16 more random players to debate. And so I would say as we've gotten older, our debates and our arguments have gotten more productive and less like, oh, like this player's better. No, this player's better. No, this player's better. No, this player's better. It's more like, okay, like why do you think this player's better? And so on, which is obviously good. And I think that just comes with age and maturity. But yeah, I think naturally twins and just honestly people who are really passionate about what they do are going to get into arguments sometimes.
He's not better. It's just because he's taking it more seriously.
I would say before it was pretty even. I'd say he's probably taking it more seriously now than I do before. But it would be interesting. I still win sometimes.
Yeah, we have-
there it is. Let's get him fighting.
Right. But seriously, who does win when you guys play chess?
Yeah, I spend my time elsewhere. So,
I beat him comfortably usually.
Oh, there you go. All right, Maxwell, crowing and strutting over here. Okay, we're going to wrap this up soon, guys. But I want to leave you with this, and this question is about intangibles that really can't be quantified. In just about every sport, coaches worship, and most players do worship the idea of team chemistry. Does that exist?
Team chemistry absolutely does matter, and anyone who says it doesn't, I will rarely take the non-analytical side in arguments, but it definitely does.
When's the last time you guys got yelled at by your parents for just doing something like really immature and stupid?
It's a tough one. It depends on what, if you count like, you know, like talking too much in the car, then like an hour ago. I have a fun example. We didn't necessarily get yelled at for this, but they weren't too thrilled. We have this nice little knee hockey set in our basement that we both love to go down there and play. And so we were staying at this apartment a couple weeks ago in New York City. And usually in an apartment, you have to be very careful because you have neighbors both like below and to your sides and stuff like that. So we brought the knee hockey set to the apartment and we spent hours just hacking away at it despite any complaints. And we were just going at it. And yeah, I mean, my parents weren't mad, but they weren't too thrilled about our choices there.
We're going to wrap this up, guys. I'm very grateful that you came on with us. I'm going to make one last attempt to goad you into sibling rivalry by asking, when we're off the air, will one of you be seething because the other one did too much talking?
We have sort of a system where, you know, when someone... We usually actually have a really good understanding of who should answer what question. You know, so naturally, like one of us has researched an idea a little more than another person has. So that's not right. too much of a problem, I guess. Every once in a while, we're like, why did you say that? Like, I could have given a better answer, but like, that's just like playful. But like sometimes when I feel like he's rambling off topic, or sometimes he feels like I'm doing it, just because, I mean, it's something right. we love talking about so much. We're like, afterwards, we're like, wait, what was the question?
Who did the rambling here? Let's do a little breakdown of this interview here. Like, what's the conversation going to be like after?
I think he did. I think we have an interesting conversation. But,
yeah, I think you both were good. A little long-winded, but you guys are just smart dudes. So you got a lot to say. Your sentences were really well-structured. I'm smart, too. I didn't want to, like, make you guys feel bad. Okay. So I'm dumbing it down for you guys a little bit. I read your book last night, too. It's a light read.
Oh, yeah. Appreciate that.
I'm young like you guys. Like, he's an old one. I'm just like you guys.
I'm sure you got through it in 20 minutes.
Yeah, it was cute. No, I'm kidding. But what's the book, Dad? Plug the book again for them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Aiden and Maxwell Resnick, the young authors of The Stats Game, a deep dive into sports analytics in the modern era. Thanks again, guys, and wish you all the best with the book and beyond. I have a feeling we'll probably be hearing from you guys again.
And let me get tickets when you guys are running a team. Remember little old Chris and Greg who interviewed you guys?
I'll do. You get a season ticket to the Marlins game. Tour of the facilities, too.
There you go. Thanks, guys.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, thank you, guys. Boys. Can I say that? I feel like they're younger than my sons. I don't know what to say. Go clean your rooms.
Gentlemen works. Or young lads.
Young laddies. Good luck with the book. I have a copy of it around here somewhere, but it would do me no good to hold it up because I'm on Zoom and this is an audio podcast. Anyway, we're coming out of the kids now and we're going into this conversation that I really want to have. It's about the phenomenon of the Levitard Show fan. It's incredible. And you guys sort of are Levitard Show fans. I mean, legit. And the magic that the show has with listeners, some of the most loyal fans, I think, anywhere. I sort of compare it to what Howard Stern has going on with his fans. But tell me if I'm wrong. I feel like the loyalty of the fans has been tested and only grown with this recent move from ESPN and then becoming a pirate ship. And now the show's about to dock with DraftKings, whole new venture. Juju, you were a big fan who became a part of the show. You're now the social media director for the Levitard Show. Yeti, you're a huge fan who's also become part of the extended family because your parody songs have appeared on the show, which is how I came to hire you recently as this podcast assistant producer. So I just want to hear from you guys mostly about what it is about the show that brings about an entire community of fans, almost like a cult. How did that happen, do you think, like if for you guys in particular?
All right. Well, I mean, for the people out there who don't know this, I got into the Levitard Show just listening to it because of you, Big Brother. You know what I mean? I was down on my luck. I was actually sleeping outside. Things weren't going right in my life. And I had a cell phone and I was like, well, this ESPN app, what is this about? You know what I mean? And I seen you guys on there and you was talking about newspapers and newspaper articles. And I was like, who is this clown? You know what I mean? Who is this geezer?
Right. I've been called worse, by the way.
But But this was me down on my luck. So I was kind of frustrated, pointing it everywhere. You know what I mean? I'm looking at my phone frustrated, like, oh, look at this guy, newspapers. And so a couple of weeks go by and I realized, okay, you come on Tuesdays. And so you would always still preach about newspapers. And it sparked something in me that I believed in myself a little bit more after listening to you, because newspapers, I mean, cover your ears, NSFW, newspapers are dead. You know what I mean? But you believed in them like as if they're the next hot thing coming out. And if you can believe in that dead horse, I can believe in my damn self. So yeah, I decided to dust myself off and try harder, you know what I mean, at what I was going at the time, which was music and just trying to find a career for myself. And with that belief, it sparked things happening, you know what I mean? So I got a tattoo of you on my leg and people in the hood was like, what in the world is that? You know what I mean? Who is that? And I explained it to one person and they made me feel so awkward after explaining it to them that I said, I'm never explaining this shit again in my life. It was embarrassing. And so, but your involvement with the show drew me in. And then from there, I expanded on, who is Billy? Okay, who is Chris? Oh, damn, that's your son? Oh, damn, okay, that's right. Crazy. So nepotism is alive and well. And it's through guys. And it's like once, but you were the initial light that led me to shore. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so again, another opportunity I get to tell you, thank you, man, because if it wasn't for you, I probably would still be in the streets doing a lot of negative things for a little bit of money. You know what I mean? Mm. So I appreciate you.
Juju, that's always amazing to hear. And the idea that anybody would have a tattoo of me on their leg is a mind blower. But I think the larger story, though, is that the Levitard Show is a family that you can become a member of, almost like you feel like you're a member of the family. And I, Yeti, try to explain what I can't, because as somebody who's integral with the show, I can't see it from a fan's perspective like others can.
Yeah. So I am one of the first things I noticed about the show is the hijinks and like the fun, like they're entertaining. I mean, no one's going to listen to a show that isn't entertaining or informative, and preferably both. And it's hard to find that balance sometimes. So the show has a really good balance of entertainment, information. One of the first things I noticed was I'm a big fan of the guys who used to be on the BBC's Top Gear, and then they went off and formed the Grand Tour on Amazon Prime. And I loved it because I enjoy cars. Like, I work on my own vehicles. I try to do all that stuff. But as far as following up with the latest cool cars and stuff, I can't call myself like a gearhead or a petrolhead. But I loved that show because they talked about cars, but they really just used cars as a vehicle for hijinks and fun amongst three guys that have incredible chemistry. And Dan, I noticed the same thing when my friend finally got me to try out Dan and the whole crew. They've got incredible chemistry that use sports as the vehicle for their hijinks and their fun. Basically, it's like as the sports is an excuse for this group of buddies to get on and just on the radio and have a great time. So that was the first thing.
So you didn't discover the show. It was recommended to you.
Yeah, I've got a buddy, Daniel Cardwell. Shout out to my friend. He kept telling me I had to check out the show. And so finally, I noticed the fact that it was using sports as a vehicle for hijinks. And then I noticed that Dan gives people the license to be themselves. But not only that, he sets an example and shows people that it's okay to look at other people as humans. That really attracted me. And I think for a large part of the audience, that's one of the same. You see some of the more rabid fans out there. Not only do they get hyped up when Dan talks about human issues and just preaches we'll call it the gospel of remembering that the people around us are human beings and are capable of making mistakes just like you and me. But you see these fans actually take Dan's message to heart, and you can see them going off and doing their own charitable things or working with other ESPN personalities to, you know, do charity drives for the things of their choice. And that really, I think, starts to get its anchors into an audience long term.
I got something from a conversation I was having earlier. I think that us in America right now, you know what I mean, on a serious tip, we need to do a better job of loving and respecting each other. You know what I mean? No matter what our beliefs are, whether it's a political party, whether it's religion, none of that stuff really matters in the grand scheme of raising our kids. You know what I mean? I think we should start being better examples all around. But a thing that we could do or implement in these schools is teaching them at a young age patience. teaching them at a young age with the same vigor we teach social studies, with the same teaching we teach math, the same vigor we teach science. Teach a class that has like patience and resolve and loving your brothers and sisters and respect. You know what I mean? Because these days are getting kind of out of hand. I don't mean to go too serious. You know what I mean? But I want to just say that we need to do a better job of loving each other, man. So don't let your bias, don't let your political allegiance, don't let none of this stuff affect how you treat your neighbors and your elders and your people. And like, it will really help the next generation if we show them how to do it. You know what I mean? And events like the Capitol thing, that's embarrassing. Those are thousands of kids' fathers and mothers. And those are thousands of examples that people are making. No matter their beliefs, it's just we got to do a better job raising our youth, because those are the people who are going to change us, you know, lead us, the next generation. Sorry for going serious.
It's interesting, Juju. You just hit on something that's worth considering. We've become so divisive in this country that the idea of teaching kindness as a school curriculum is not outlandish to me.
Right.
You know, teaching tolerance, teaching, you know, just basically getting along with other people and not being judgmental. And that's, you know, that's not a terrible idea. I can think of worse things to major in class, or at least to be required to take is a course in that. Interesting concept.
That's something else that Dan brings to the table, is these voices he's inviting onto his show and giving license and permission to be themselves on and to give their voice is like, these are the things they're talking about as well, is to love your neighbor, to remember that people are people and we make mistakes, to give people room to breathe and be understood, and to actually just listen. And I think that's another thing that endears the broader audience as well.
Yeah, hell yeah. But like I said, back to the teaching in school, like, I shouldn't know more about John Wilkes Booth and what happened in the theater more than I know how to be patient with my brothers and sisters. You know what I mean? So we should, mm-hmm. we should put a foot forward into changing some stuff like that.
Right. Right. No, that's a very, very valid point. And I think the lesson I take out of this is that we all need to be a little bit kinder and listen to the Greg Cody Show podcast just a little bit more.
Zagatko.
I think we can all take that lesson, you know, tuck it under the pillow like a mint and sleep on it. On Mystery Crate, I think it was Christopher and Billy who invited on a bunch of Levitard Show super fans onto a Zoom to have a discussion. And I think that was sort of the genesis of the idea that you don't have to be a fan alone. You can be a part of a community. And now you see, you know, you have a podcast with another fan of the show. There's Lauer After Hours. You know, my podcast wouldn't exist probably if it weren't for my fans on the Levitard Show supporting it. And I wonder, what is it about the community, the idea that there's strength in numbers, that you guys, the fandom metastasizes because so many fans know each other and connect with each other?
All right, let me start to answer your question by actually throwing this question over to Juju. How many friends do you have, like, in your, like, physical friends that you would hang out with that know anything about the show?
Oh, that's a zero, Yeti.
Same here, for the most part.
I hang out with actual problems. And so, you know what I mean? They don't understand nothing.
Yeah. And that's, I maybe have three, but everyone I've talked to that I've met on Twitter over the last just over a year, since the Fine Song came out, they are all in very similar situations. They don't have any buddies that actually listen to the show. And another common factor is our spouses, for the most part, don't like the show either. But so I think that means when it comes to the online interactions, by opening these doors, by having Juju on to form the Lauer Rangers, and coin that phrase, and having those dinner for schmucks, and then by Christopher being willing to pass on a song that I sent in to Mike Ryan, and then 3 days later doing the same with Andrew, and then Flem and M later, and starting the song wars, that gave us license to be a part of the show.
Shouts out to the Lauer Rangers, the original Lauer Rangers, as Hefe states us. Morgan from Australia, my Ryan fan account, who else? Stu Pop. Salute my dog, Stu Pop. And if I forgot anybody, I'm so sorry, but I think that's him. Lauer Rangers. Go, go, Lauer Rangers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mixtape comes soon. Shouts out to my family. I love y'all.
All right. It is a family. I mean, and when Levitard goes on and on the air about how much he appreciates the fans and how amazing they are, he's not kidding, because he says that off the air too. We're always astounded by the loyalty of the fans and the crowds that come to those Moss Miami events, which I think another one is on the way soon, by the way. And What do you guys think of the direction of the show? And I want to ask you this, Yeti, because Juju is like paid, a paid member of the show now, so I don't want him to answer this. But the show is evolving right now. It's trying to figure out how it's, where it's headed and what it's going to be when it gets there. And so there are new voices on the show now. Jessica Smetana and Chris Whittingham have joined the show. And when on Tuesdays, when I'm in there, it's a lot of voices. It's a lot of things for Dan to fit in. And he's still trying to figure all that out. As a listener, what do you think of adding people and sort of the evolution of the show?
So I've been really impressed with the shipping containers and Dan and Stu, of course, but Mike Ryan's, especially Mike's ability to just make all of this work. And so speaking specifically about Jessica and Chris joining the show, I feel like they, and this stood out more with Jessica because I'd never heard of her before. She was just And Others, Greg.
Right.
You know, I'd heard Chris Whittingham plenty. I'd had some exposure to him. He had been featured around the show. I knew about his relationship with Mike Ryan, and they're, you know, the Chelsea mic'd up. So like he felt like a natural transition. Sure. But Jessica, like, it sounds like she's been in there for 5 years with those guys already.
She's been really great.
And that goes a lot to her and that her personality and being able to, what she can bring to the table. But a lot of it is the guys have to allow that too. And they've done great at allowing her the opportunity to breathe and to speak and to play off of any of the foibles that any of us have had. So I think the both of them, the chemistry is instantly there, but that also goes to, I mean, I know that, I don't know if Mike is the one who says, you know, I am hiring you. I don't know if that's it, but like, I know he had a big, you know, his thumbprint was all over those hires, but like, that's a testament to his, eye and ear for talent as well. So that's been really cool. The show's change overall, the amount of talent that has gone in from everybody. Mike mentioned recently, or on an episode of Lauer After Hours, Mike made an appearance and he says it takes a lot of work to come off this disorganized. But they do it so well. The fact that they were able to get that show on the air the next day after leaving ESPN so that the fans could still have something and wouldn't get worried. Like that, it's incredible. The fact that they put on as many shows as they have, as regularly as they have, is just a testament to an entire team effort that I have no idea how they do it, but they do. And that's another thing that makes them special. Juju, I know you're a company man, you're on the payroll, but you're still a fan and still an avid listener. What's your take on what Greg just asked me about the transition with adding the new voices and the change of the show altogether?
I love every single thing that Dan has ever done in his entire life. I love every single thing Mike has ever done in his entire life. I love everything that Chris stands for, Whittingham. I love everything that Jessica brings to the show. I love everything that Chris Cody brings to the show. Roy, I love Roy, King Roy. I love his part in the show. I love Billy. I love everything he brings to the show. I love Stu Gatz, everything he brings to the show. I agree with everything they have ever done and everything they will ever do. I used to be homeless and these people gave me a job. No matter what goes, whatever happens in life, I will always have their backs. And so whatever they decide, man, not only do I believe in it, but I'm going to put 100% enthusiasm behind it because I love those brothers.
Dan just texted me and said, you read that very well. You're checking it out.
but Juju means every bit of it, and we all know that. Before we move on, I want to say that I agree with you guys. I think it's amazing how quickly Jessica has fit in so seamlessly. And you know, Dan hires good people. He makes smart hires. He wanted a female voice, and I think he got just the right one. So looking forward to seeing how that's going to evolve and being a small part of it as well. So now you know what's ahead. It's Mount Gregmore. And we have an unusual one this week. It's the Mount Gregmore of Music Acts. acts that should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame but keep getting wrongly snubbed. Juju, you of course would be number one on my list, but
thank you.
It turns out you won't be eligible until 25 years after the release of your first album, so you have a little bit of a wait ahead of you. But if I'm alive, then you'll get my vote. Anyway, this month, Greg Moore, is in the form of a quiz because I'm going to, you know, give my little hints and ask you guys if you know who I'm talking about. So, first, our honorable mention. He died in 1967, but in a musical history class in college, I learned that this saxophone has pretty much invented freestyle jazz. Miles Davis is in the Hall of Fame. Now it's past time to induct who?
Louis Armstrong.
It's a valid guess, but it's wrong.
Is John Coltrane not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
It's John Coltrane is the correct answer. He is not in the Hall of Fame.
That is a crime against humanity.
John Coltrane, who I knew, this is a crime.
Born in Hamlet, North Carolina, by the way. North Carolina proud.
How about that?
Take your shirts off. Rave them over your head like a helicopter.
You just happen to know the hometown of John Coltrane?
I knew it was in North Carolina, but I couldn't remember exactly where, so I had to look it up real quick.
Okay, number five. He's once, twice, three times a getting screwed over. It's...
That's what she said.
Juju, once, twice, three times a lady.
Pamela Anderson.
Okay, with or without the Commodores, it's Lionel Richie.
Oh, okay. That was my next guess.
All right, number four. It isn't often that someone's major, best-known hit song features werewolves.
Michael Jeffrey Jackson.
Oh, you know what? That's a good guess because he did have a song, Thriller.
Warren Zevon is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
You got that right. It's Warren Zevon.
Okay, I call BS. You didn't know that. You got the answers.
Are you cheating, Yeti?
No, I'm not cheating. I know this stuff.
Who the hell is Warren Zevon?
Werewolves in London.
Yes.
Go for it, Greg. Hit us with one. Hit us with one. Go, your turn.
I can't hit those high notes.
Little old lady got mutilated late last night.
Never heard.
Yeah, white people sing about some weird crap, man.
Warren Zevon, man. You gotta tap into him, Juju.
I'm gonna tap in today.
All right, number three. The Rock Hall has blessed certain country stars like Johnny Cash, but not nearly enough. It's time to tell the hall to roll one and light it up for...
Willie Jeffrey Nelson. Yes, sir.
You got that right.
My boy.
Yes. I can't believe he's not in the Hall of Fame. All right, number two. It's super freaky that this Funkmaster isn't in.
Funkmaster Jeffrey Flex.
Super freak.
It's super freaky.
Oh,
Dave Chappelle,
don't.
Man.
Don't. Ray James.
There you go.
Yes. All right. Okay, this is a hard one. I don't know if you guys are going to get this or not. Number one. The number one Rock and Roll Hall of Fame snub of all time. The Cleveland Shrine all but ignores reggae, with only Bob Marley and Jimmy Cliff inducted. The next one in line should be the group that literally invented the word reggae. Who is it?
Reggaeton. The Wailers.
Nope.
Gosh, yeah. I heard the name on a podcast about a month ago, but I do not remember.
Their leader, Fred Hibbert, died just last September.
Father of Roy?
No, oddly enough.
You've stumped me on this one, Greg.
Okay, it's a tough one, but Toots and the Maytals is the name of that group.
Okay, look, if someone locked me in a jail cell and said, your only key out of here is to name this band that you just asked me, I would be in jail for three life sentences.
Oh, man.
That was a good Mount Gregmore. I loved it.
I loved it, too.
I loved the trivia aspect of it. That was a good approach.
The quiz thing did work out pretty well. Anyway, we've had fun today. Interesting conversation about the Levitard Show phenomenon and other stuff. I want to thank again the young book authors of The Stats Game for joining us. And most of all, thank you all, podcast family. You know how much we appreciate you here. And Juju, thanks for sitting in with us today. Yeti, as always, Christopher will be back in the pod next week. And we'll see you all then. Bye-bye.
your sentences were really well structured. I'm smart too.